After months of meetings, President Barack Obama is expected to announce a decision to increase troop numbers in Afghanistan. There is some speculation as to how many troops he will add, but according to a senior military official quoted by the Wall Street Journal, a likely number is 30,000 to 35,000 extra U.S. troops. 10,000 of those could be used to train the Afghan National Army, with the idea of transferring military control to them eventually. However, the recent election debacle in Afghanistan has called into serious question the legitimacy of the central government and President Hamid Karzai, who's been implicated in serious counts of fraud. Further, Karzai's brother is a suspected drug lord and, according to the New York Times, receiving millions of dollars from the CIA. U.S. Ambassador Carl Eikenberry has reportedly urged Obama not to send any more troops until the central government regains credibility, according to news reports of a leaked cable transmission this morning. Matthew Ho, a former Marine Corps captain, recently became the first known U.S. official to resign over his opposition to the Afghan war. In stepping down from his foreign service position in Zabul province, Ho publicly expressed his frustrations that the war was viewed by most Afghans as an unwelcome occupation. Ho's statements are reminiscent of a man who most famously went public over his opposition to a similar war more than 35 years ago. Daniel Ellsberg, a former U.S. military analyst who leaked the so-called Pentagon Papers during the Vietnam War. Ellsberg is now one of Afghanistan war's most fervent critics, and he's going to be speaking at an event in Los Angeles this evening. He now joins me on the phone. Welcome to Uprising, Daniel.
Good to be here. Thank you, Sumali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Daniel, when I last saw you, which was just a little over a month and a half ago, you were here in Los Angeles talking about the film that is based on your life, The Most Dangerous Man in America. And you at that time said that you had some respect for President Obama because he was taking his time, it seemed, to think about all of the various options, that he was being patient, that he was potentially troubled by what was happening in Afghanistan and potentially might actually do the right thing. Do you feel differently now?
I feel more hopeful this morning than I have for a long time because of the news that you mentioned this morning of Ambassador Eikenberry, Eikenberry, just looking at here, not a familiar name to me till now, but I hope he'll get to be very familiar. For instance, I hadn't realized that the current ambassador to Afghanistan had been in charge of military operations there and that he's a lieutenant general. In other words, that he can speak with as much, if not more, authority from a military point of view on the situation than General McChrystal.
So he's unlike other ambassadors, U.S. ambassadors to other countries?
Well, most ambassadors, of course, are civilians. In fact, it's fairly rare for a general to be an ambassador. And in this case, he was a general, as I say, in charge of operations in that country. I'm not sure I do know of an analogy to that. It's quite unusual. So the point is that when he speaks on military proposals, as he's now saying no more troops now, his advice has the same military weight, at least, as General Petraeus or General McChrystal. And it sounds to me much, much more sensible. Something that encourages me also is that I believe he may well have been influenced by speaking very bluntly to the president and cogently, by the example of his former subordinate, Matthew Ho, who was, as a Foreign Service officer and a senior officer in one of his most difficult provinces, districts, who resigned, of course, a few weeks ago and came public. Now, it was put out at the time that he was so well regarded, Ho, H-O-H, that Ambassador Eikenberry offered him a job on his own staff if he would stay in the embassy, which he turned down. And then the plenipotentiary, Richard Holbrooke, who was in charge ambassador for Iraq and Pakistan and Afghanistan over the other Foreign Service people, offered him a job in his staff, Holbrooke's staff in Washington, which he accepted for about a week and then turned it down in order to be able to speak freely and independently. Now, obviously, Ho was not only known to Eikenberry, who wanted him to stay, but did have interaction with Eikenberry before he left. Eikenberry offered him a job. I read into that Eikenberry met somebody who was giving up his career in order to tell the truth to the country and to the Congress as well as to the president, and may well have been encouraged to do the same. Now, if the two of them together could encourage one, two, three, or four more people to do that, I think we'd have a breaking in the dam here that would allow us to really appreciate the realities of Afghanistan, what the real options are, and do what both Eikenberry and Ho are calling for. In the case of Eikenberry, to hold the line pretty much where we are. Ho was calling for an actual reduction. But we are now hearing that a fourth option has joined the three we've been hearing about for about a week now in the White House. And the three were 20, all in levels, 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. And the unspoken number was the 80, 85,000 that McChrystal is now known to have asked as his favorite option, if he could get it, the low-risk option. So when we heard about a fourth option, I must say my first reaction was, yeah, you know, 80,000. It seems now, as of today's news, that the fourth option is leaked to maybe 10,000, which will be not combat troops, but to train the Afghan army. Definitely, very much, by the way, what Joe Biden, the vice president, seems to have been calling for right along. So theoretically, Biden's proposal, which was put off the table by McChrystal's lobbying against it, he lobbied against it even at NATO headquarters in what looked very like insubordination, something like Douglas MacArthur's going around the president in the Korean War, for which MacArthur was fired. Hard to fire McChrystal right now, although, in my opinion, desirable, but hard to do that when he had, when Obama himself had appointed him and had endorsed his strategy earlier. But there were rumors that McChrystal would resign if he didn't get very close to the minimum he was asking, and the minimum was 40,000, not 20,000 or 30,000.
Now, on the issue of the Biden proposal that you just mentioned, the other part of his proposal, in addition to having, you know, a smaller number, 10,000 troops to help train the Afghan National Army, was the increasing reliance on unmanned drones to more heavily expand the war in the border region between Afghanistan and Pakistan. I suppose we don't really know details of what's being really discussed, but I'm wondering if you think that we might be a little premature in being hopeful about the smaller number of troops now being considered, because they may just expand the war elsewhere.
Now, as of now, stopping those drone attacks, which I and analysts that I respect regard as necessary, as urgent, is not on the table, quote. And we've heard of none of the participants in the government or in Congress have urged that. Why do I urge that? Because from everything we have heard reported, there's every reason to believe that it builds more recruits for the Taliban and for al-Qaeda even than can possibly be, quote, eliminated or neutralized by the drone attacks. In killing the civilians and in putting virtually all the civilians under threat, hour by hour, as these drones hover over them visibly in the sky, not knowing which wedding party will receive the next rocket, or which funeral party after the first rocket attack will be itself attacked. That kind of anxiety and fury and rage of the victims and the people terrorized by that is the most fertile possible recruiting grounds for the Taliban. So it seems to me a totally feckless policy, although I can perfectly well hear the arguments that are made for it. It's killing some Taliban leaders, and what else are we doing that does that? So they talk about it as the only productive approach, ignoring the fact that not just in the long run, but in the short run, it's hurting us very badly. Now, when I say that, then, I say I'm criticizing part of Biden's proposal and what is likely to happen. But given that the president is virtually sure to continue those attacks, unfortunately, right now, then is 10,000 better than 40,000 or 30,000 or 20,000 additional troops? Yes, I say that definitely. So it's less of a commitment. It keeps the possibility open for another part, by the way, of of all people, Karzai's program. Corrupt as he is and involved heavily in the dope trade as he is, he has been calling for negotiations with the Taliban. Now, that wasn't on the table, you can be sure, until very recently, if it is at all. Now, is that really conceivable? Yes. He dealt with the Taliban when he was representing oil companies and trying to get a pipeline through Afghanistan earlier, his earlier life. So he undoubtedly knows a number of their leaders, and he calls them brothers. He recognizes them as brother Afghans. He's a Pashtun himself, which is where the Taliban is based. I would say that a combination of 10,000 troops, which is now leaked, to, quote, train the Afghan army, which has no prospect of success whatever, but is better than sending the troops into the countryside to kill Afghans and be killed themselves, could be combined with a negotiating approach here, which would have a real prospect of getting us out of there.
I'm speaking with Daniel Ellsberg, the famed dissenter during the Vietnam War who leaked the Pentagon Papers. A new film about him was just released this year, The Most Dangerous Man in America. He's now one of the Afghanistan War's most important critics, and he's going to be speaking tonight at an event organized by the Brave New Foundation. It's happening in Venice at the Venice United Methodist Church. And in fact, Matthew Ho, the Foreign Service officer who recently resigned that we've just been discussing as well, will also be present and on a panel alongside Daniel Ellsberg and Robert Greenwald, the producer, director, and political activist, founder, and president of Brave New Foundation, whose film Rethink Afghanistan has also been making waves. I'll be joining the panel too, and that's happening tonight at 7:30 p.m. There's going to be a screening of the film and a guest panel with all of these panels. There'll be a reception at 6:30 p.m. That's the Venice United Methodist Church, 1020 Victoria Avenue in Venice. And to RSVP, you can just simply email rsvp@bravenewfoundation.org. That's rsvp@bravenewfoundation.org. Now, I want to take you up on this point that you just made, Daniel, briefly before we end our conversation, which is the issue of negotiations with the Taliban. And in fact, Karzai had been negotiating with the Taliban, and there is a member of the parliament who is a Taliban leader. There are many Taliban-like figures in the government, and it seems to me as though it doesn't seem quite a bit of a victory from grassroots activist perspective to have a Taliban-dominated government installed in Afghanistan, enabling us to leave, because it seems as though for the past 8 years, all we've done is create a government of fundamentalists and Taliban-like, as well as actual Taliban leaders. So why should that be considered a victory from the perspective of peace-loving Americans and Afghans?
Well, first of all, a victory for Americans is to withdraw, extricate ourselves from military involvement in the affairs of, really, not only of Afghanistan, but I would say of Iraq and Pakistan as well. That brings us no good, and it hasn't brought much good for the people of that area. But the Taliban, to start with, as far as I can see, have never posed a security threat to the United States. The sanctuary that they offered to Al-Qaeda was certainly opportunistic and convenient for Al-Qaeda, not essential, as we're seeing right now. Al-Qaeda is no longer there, and there are many other places they could be, and they don't operate from a headquarters very much. We keep hearing that in Afghanistan, the 9/11 attacks were planned. Well, actually not. They were okayed by Osama bin Laden, who was at that time in Afghanistan. The planning was done elsewhere, as it would be in the future, and it's being done elsewhere. And the implementation and the training was done elsewhere. The training camps did not provide the hijackers, for example, training camps in Afghanistan. So the Taliban, who, the question is, can they be bargained with, can they be negotiated with, to prevent a return of Al-Qaeda to that country? I am no judge of that, but others who know the region much better say yes, that's quite possible, that there's no, that the statements that of course Al-Qaeda will return if we're not there by Hillary Clinton are not well-founded at all. But in any case, and even if that were the case, as Paul Pillar has pointed out, the CIA analyst for that area, even a base in Afghanistan of some sort would not be any critical addition to Al-Qaeda's capabilities, and denying it is not any critical blow to them. It's not the issue that it's been described. So on terms of the Taliban, when we're talking about negotiating with the Taliban, that doesn't mean negotiating with the and giving them full power or even a major part of power. It probably means some kind of coalition where they're represented in the government. The Pashtun, as I understand it, have felt excluded a good deal in the cities. But their strength of the Taliban, which is largely a rural Pashtun area, as Matthew Ho has pointed out very, very well, by the way, is not in the cities. and they didn't really have the capability of taking the cities after the Soviets.
Well, but you're saying that the Taliban would like to be represented in the government. Ordinary Afghans would also like to be represented in the government. And I think at this point you have to sort of choose between one or the other, because the Taliban won't let ordinary Afghans, and neither will the warlords in the government.
Yes. Look, you're familiar, I'm sure, with the position of Malalai Joya, who points out that ordinary Taliban, ordinary Afghanistan's now, Afghanis, pardon me, are oppressed by three oppressors, the American invaders, the Taliban, and the warlords. And her desire to get the Americans out of there is to say that's one less oppressive force for us to have to deal with, the other two being being Afghan, whatever their merits and demerits. And they both have a lot, the warlords and the Taliban. I haven't seen any American statesman who's shown an ability to arrange matters in Afghanistan for the benefit of Afghanis, and you can be sure that's not a high priority for them.
Right.
Why imperialism, trying to govern a place that of a different color, religion, ethnic background, and language from thousands of miles away, is not a good idea, and there's no future in it.
Well, Daniel Ellsberg, we'll have to continue our conversation tonight. I look forward to seeing you at the panel.
Okay, very good. Good to see you tonight, Sonali. The reason I'm very happy to come is to meet Matthew Ho.
Absolutely. Daniel Ellsberg has been my guest, and he's going to be on a guest panel tonight alongside Matthew Ho, the recently resigned Foreign Service officer who resigned in protest of the Afghanistan occupation. Robert Greenwald will be on the panel, as will I, and there's going to be a screening of Rethink Afghanistan, and also that is all happening at Venice United Methodist Church, 1020 Victoria Avenue in Venice. And it's happening at 7:30 p.m. There's also a reception at 6:30 p.m. And to RSVP, just email rsvp@bravenewfoundation.org. There is a donation to enter that includes a copy of the film. Again, you can find out more by emailing rsvp@bravenewfoundation.org. And we'll list this information on our website later today as well at kpfk.org.